prayer. I ask a continued interest in your prayers tonight. I have a subject on my mind tonight that I guess I've preached on it a couple of times in the past. I'm trying to remember when, but with all of the reports that we've been getting here lately of the struggles that God's people are having, it reminded me the Lord tells us to fear not. And I'm certainly not going to try to cover all of the occasions where that is mentioned in the Bible, but I do want to approach the subject and the heart of it at least. I want to notice several occasions in the Old Testament where there were those who were told to fear not, and there were some very good reasons, even though they were under some serious conditions. You know, if I tell you to fear not when there's a very, very bad struggle going on, I don't know how much weight that would carry. But when the Lord says, fear not, he has good reason for it. And you know, he never spoke an idle word. Everything in his in this Bible, all the 66 books of it, everything that we have recorded that he said, was all pure truth, and the Lord always went straight to the heart of the matter. And so when he's telling folks to fear not, you can just rest assured they are fearful at the moment, right? And he's getting to it. All right, so let's get into it. The Lord knows, and he knew when he gave us his word, that we need to hear those words, fear not. There's plenty of things, plenty of challenges. As we just went through the prayer request tonight, we have loved ones that are going through some serious challenges themselves. But, you know, life is just full of challenges. This is the way it is. Jesus said, in the world, ye shall have a bed of roses? No. He said, in the world ye shall have tribulation. In other words, don't feel like the Lone Ranger if you're going through some tribulation. It's going to happen. We live in a fallen world. We're just going to have to deal with those situations when they come. All right? But Jesus didn't stop there when he said, when he gave the bad news, he didn't stop there. He said, but be of good cheer. He didn't stop there. I have. He didn't say I'm trying to. He didn't say I might. He said I have overcome the world. Now that ought to stir confidence in us at every remembrance of that blessed truth, all right? So we're going to have challenges. Sometimes they're health challenges. And oftentimes our prayer requests, there's a lot of health challenges that God's people are going through. Sometimes it's a relationship. Sometimes it's children. Sometimes it's parents. Sometimes it's parents of children. You know, there's just all kinds of things that we encounter in life. Sometimes it's a job, you know. I've shared with folks over the years, I had an experience that I had drawn a lot of strength from for many years. When we lived in the St. Louis area, the company I was with, it wasn't doing really well. And my supervisor came to me one morning and said, there's going to be 5 people laid off today and you're one of them. Well, we were 800 miles from home. You know, that just kind of rattles my cage. I'll admit it. Had a family to take care of. But really, my supervisor gave me a note and asked me to meet him out in the hall. And That's when we got out there away from everybody else, that's when he said, you know, there's going to be five people laid off today, and you're one of them. And my cubicle was where I could see the corner office, the big corner office, where the boss was. And one by one, I counted. First one went in, went out the door. Second one went in, went out the door. Third one went in, went out. Four went in, went out the door. And I said, well, I'm next. But it never happened. I was never told why. I don't know why they changed their mind. I like to think I know why. But you know, after that conversation with my supervisor that morning, I went off to myself for a little bit before I went back in the office, and you know what thought came to my mind? You know, those sparrows, are not five sparrows sold for 2 farthings? And not one of them is forgotten. Are you not worth many sparrows? And there was a peace that came over me, so I went back to face whatever I had to face. And they never came to me. I was never laid off. That was just a special blessing God gave to me in a time when I was very fearful. Because living in St. Louis is not like living around here for a lot of reasons. But I carried something away from that experience that is still precious to me today. I learned something about fearing not. Now, I've feared since then. You know, things happen that concern us. But I've got that to draw from. And when I can remember that, and when I go back to that, it gives me a whole lot of peace. All right? So, there's a lot of people in the scriptures that the Lord has told, fear not. But you know, while we know all of that, the devil, one of his favorite tools is to get us to fear. And if he can get our mind off of the Lord and onto our circumstances and our inability and our weakness and our whatever, as long as he can keep us in that frame of mind, he's winning. And we're miserable. But if we can think about the Lord, if we could remember his goodness, his mercy, his strength, his power, his glory, when we remember to think about the Lord, and bless your hearts, we can find ourselves in a frame of mind of thanksgiving instead of being fearful. And so the old devil tries his best to get us to get our mind off of the Lord. And that's where fear comes from, doesn't it? All right? So, what happens when we're fearful? I mean, what is seen in us when we're fearful? Well, one thing it does is it lessens our praise and godliness. If we're fearful and if we're afraid, we're not going to be as quick to be thankful. We're not as quick to praise God. We find ourselves drawing within ourselves. Is God pleased with that? No. We have every reason. And we heard a good lesson last night down in Bonifay. We have every reason to be thankful to God for all that he gives us and is giving and has given and will continue to give. The appropriate response from us is to be thankful. So as we think about fear causes us to our witness to be less than it should be. Causes us to be less confident than we should be. I mean, there's all kinds of, you see, if we're gripped with fear, there's all kinds of things that lessens what we ought to be as a child of God. Everything we do, we should do it as heartily as unto the Lord. But that's not happening when someone's gripped with fear. And so it's a serious thing. Not only does it affect us, but it affects our witness before others. And that's something that we need to be mindful of and thankful that the Lord has blessed us. So it not only is it weaken us, but it undermines our confidence. Then we begin to question things. And so we need to be mindful not to be fearful. So the bottom line is we're less salt and light than we should be. All right? How much salt and light should we be? Well, we should be as much as we can. We should be letting that light shine as much as we can. We should have as good an influence as we can have. And I tell you, as I've trying to go through some of our records and reading up on some of the past and just gaining a greater appreciation for the heritage that we have here at this church and the people that have gone this way before us, I tell you, we got some folks that let their light shine brightly. Now, it's our opportunity. You know, we don't want to dwell on the past. We want to we want to see that great cloud of witnesses. But we want to run that race with patience, looking unto Jesus today and tomorrow and the next day. We want to carry that forward, just like they did. Okay? So as we think about what happens, we're less salt and light than we should be, then the devil's winning. We don't want to give anything to the devil. All right? So Peter tells us, your adversary, the devil. Remember? 1 Peter 5:7? Your adversary. That right off the bat, you see who he is. He's your adversary. And if I know what an adversary is, he's not looking out for our good. He doesn't want our good. All right? Your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, goeth about seeking whom he may devour. You know that verse. That's what he's going about doing. But I love to couple that with 2 Chronicles 16:9. Do you remember that one? For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward him. If we're looking to the Lord, if we're trusting the Lord, if we're holding on, if we're like Job, and though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Then bless your heart, the eyes of the Lord are running to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on your behalf. And so that's what we need, don't we? If we find ourselves in a place where we're fearful, we need to remember that. If we're trusting the Lord, he's going to look out for us. Okay? You know that there's a word in the Old Testament that Isaiah uses several times. Rearward. Kind of hard to say, isn't it? Rearward. But I love what it means. It means he's got our back. You know, and I like to couple that with the armor of God, don't you? The armor of God's for the front. We're supposed to face the battle. We're supposed to be engaged in this warfare. And as long as we're doing the Lord's will, as long as we're seeking his will and doing what's pleasing to him, he'll take care of the consequences. That rearward was the detail that would come behind and take care of the consequences of whatever had happened. All right? So, when we think about several of the... I want to try to get three passages in the Old Testament. Preacher, why don't you go to the New Testament? I could. But the Old Testament is so rich in meaning. And it's real people with real problems real life situations. I mean, yes, it's Old Testament, but listen, they were children of God back then. And God was the same back then. And they faced a lot of the same problems we face today in the New Testament. Right? So it doesn't matter whether we go to the New Testament or the Old, but there's several that I have noticed in the Old Testament. I want to go, first of all, to Genesis 15, where Abraham is. All right, Genesis 15. Let me turn to that. Genesis 15. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram, came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Fear not, Abram. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." Now, Abraham had gone out and rescued Lot and his family and some others. And so the Lord comes to Abram and he says, "Fear not." And I think I already touched on this early on. Would the Lord have told him to fear not if it wasn't some concern that he was having? You see, and I think I did allude to this earlier, the Lord never engaged in small talk. "How you doing? Got any concerns?" He never did that. He went straight to the matter. The Lord appeared to him and said, or spoke to him and said, "Fear not, I am thy shield." Which leads me to believe that perhaps there was some concern from Abraham that there might be some retaliation from those kings over what had happened. That's my persuasion. And so the Lord comes to him and says, "I am thy shield." That ought to settle the matter right there. If the Lord says he's going to be your shield, and Abraham, you know, if that was his concern, which it seems that it was because the Lord addressed it, can you imagine having, well, maybe you've had an experience like that. Maybe you've had a great concern, and the Lord gives you something. You know, we don't hear his audible voice, at least I never have, but we'll have an impression of heart. Maybe a passage of scripture, maybe a verse, maybe a word. But the Lord is able to calm our soul by giving us what we need when we are in trouble or struggling. He's been doing that for a long time, and he continues to do it today. And I believe he'll continue to do it until the Lord comes again. Because he's promised never to leave us nor forsake us. So that we may boldly say, "The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me." All right? So he says, "I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." Now let me notice a couple of other passages that deal somewhat with this. Deuteronomy 12. And 28. This is Moses speaking to the children of Israel in that second reading of the law, Deuteronomy. And he says, Deuteronomy 12, verse 28. "Observe and hear all these words which I command thee, that it may go well with thee." Now, he's not promising us a flowery bed of ease. We've already talked about, Jesus said very faithfully, in the world you shall have tribulation. But I'm telling you something. This is the best road to follow. That it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee forever. When thou doest that which is good and right in the sight of the Lord thy God. Again, he's not saying you won't have any troubles. What he is saying is that you will have him to help you with your troubles. Isn't that worth a lot? Oh, that's worth wonderful things. And so Peter would tell us in the New Testament, 1 Peter 3:13, and who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? Right? Same thought. Then I'm also going to get Proverbs 1:33. See, the Lord said he was our shield and our exceeding great reward. Proverbs. Told in Proverbs 1:33, but whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. And shall be quiet from fear of evil. We can trust the Lord, can't we? He knows far more than we do. He knows everything about us. He's able to supply our every need. And so when we do face those challenges, they're going to come. And when we are tempted to be fearful, and oftentimes those fears grip us before we have time to think about it. But the sooner we can remember the goodness and mercy and the power of our God, the better off we're going to be. When we're set our affection upon him, set our heart upon him, and remember that he's our shield and our exceeding great reward. What blessings we have from the Lord. All right? Let's move ahead in Genesis to Genesis 21. Remember the time when Abraham and Sarah, I guess the way we commonly describe it, is they got tired of waiting on God's promise and tried to figure out a way to have a child as God had promised, which was not the promised child, Ishmael, okay? And eventually, without getting into the whole story, eventually Hagar is sent away with the child, okay? So in Genesis 21, that's in Genesis 21, let's notice verse 12. I guess I could back up here to a few verses. I'll begin reading in verse 9. Genesis 21, verse 9. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. Now, Isaac is the promised son, the promised child. Okay? And there's a lot of symbolism here. Paul would later in the Galatian letter say that, now we then, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. Okay, so it's representing God's provision and God's blessing upon his people, all right? And the separation there between Isaac and Ishmael. Verse 11, and the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman, in all that Sarah has said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. All right? And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness in Beersheba. The water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bowshot. For she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. Can you imagine a mother and in this situation? I'm just trying to just notice that these are real people, real problems, real situations. According to the scriptures, there's no indication that Hagar instigated any of this. But she finds herself now with her child in the desert without any water. And she has decided that he's probably going to die. And there's nothing she can do about it. Just imagine. I'd say she was fearful. And God heard the voice of the lad. It's going to make all the difference in the world, isn't it? And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Now, when God asks questions like that, we know he knows all about it. But for the record of his word, it will help us to think about it. Fear not, he said, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. You know, a few years ago, that expression, that last part of that verse just jumped out at me one day. And I'd read it so many times that it just never really registered with me. But isn't that always the case with God? He knows where we are. I'm not talking about just location. I'm not talking about just, geospatial. I'm talking about he knows where we are, the condition of our heart, the condition of our faith. He knows what the circumstances are. He knows what brought us there. He knows what he has in mind. God hath heard the voice of the lad. Now, there's a whole lot more taught here, but I'm just looking at what God came on the scene to this woman. No doubt her heart was broken because her child was dying of thirst. And he says, fear not. God is able to do that. And he's put it in his word, and he's shown us time after time when he has done that. And so we know that the New Testament tells us that whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the scriptures, might have hope. Bless your hearts, we see that God is able to supply the needs. He heard the voice of the lad where he was. And he was able to supply. And so he told her, and lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. All right? Now right there, he'd already told Abraham, but he's telling Hagar right there that he's going to make a great nation of him. What does that tell her immediately? It's going to be all right. They're going to make it. God's going to take care of them. God's going to provide a way. And certainly he did. Okay? So this is one of those situations where we find the great need and God showing in a great way how that he's able to supply, how he's able to come to the aid and help. Even when the situation looks impossible for us, that's when God shines the brightest, isn't it? When it seems impossible for us. Later on in Genesis 46, he's going to speak to Jacob when Jacob was an old man. Genesis 46, turn to that. This is when Joseph has made himself known to his brethren that he's going to send all these provisions back home to Jacob. They're in the midst of this famine. You know, remember the dreams that God blessed Joseph to interpret? There's going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. Well, they've been through the 7 years of plenty. Now they've been through 2 years of this famine. And it's gotten to where the situation is getting really bad. Jacob had sent his sons down to Egypt to get corn. They heard there was food in Egypt. And then he had to send again. But the man had told them they had to bring their youngest brother. And it really disturbed Jacob to have to send Benjamin. But it was so dire. They were starving. They had to go. And so they went. And so Joseph this time reveals himself to his brethren. They send these great provisions back. Okay, and I'll get back into the previous chapter a little bit in a minute. But I want to read a few verses out of Genesis 46. And Israel, Jacob, okay, and Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto God, unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. There was great concern. But by now, Joseph had sent his brethren back home with over 20, at least 20 animals burdened, the asses and the she asses. There was 10 of each. You know, the number 10 is a number of testimony in the scriptures. Just like when Abraham's servant was sent out to find a wife for Isaac, he sent with him 10 camels laden with all the riches of Abraham. Elder Leon Wiggins, some of you may have known him from over Smithville, Georgia, the pastor over Brunswick for a while. He said he never understood why the Lord would send 10 camels to get one woman, until he married his wife and went traveling with her. Now that's lighthearted. But no doubt those 10 camels bore a testimony of the riches of his master as he went out to seek the wife for Isaac. But all of these, so Joseph here sends these, it mentions the tens of the bird, beast of burden to carry those things back to Jacob and the rest of the family. But the instruction was from Joseph to take Jacob and bring him back down to Egypt. Now, Jacob's an old man by now, 130 years old. And for him to pick up and move, and all of them together, that was, you know, his sons, his grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, they were all supposed to gather and come down to Egypt. Would that cause you any concern if you were very up in years and you were told to just pick up and leave? Leave everything you had? But God says, fear not. I'm going to go with you. Wow. Does that give you any comfort today? That we can see that God is with his people. And if he tells them, if it's his will for them to do something, he'll go with us. He'll be with us. You know, Moses, on one occasion, the Lord said he wasn't going to go with him. And Moses said, well, if Lord, if you're not going to go with us, don't send us. You know? And isn't that the way it is? We don't ever want to go where we don't feel like the Lord is going to go with us. We want to be in his will. Doing that, trusting in him, looking to him, asking for his help, and with good conscience asking him for his help. For we know his love and his mercy and his grace. All right? So notice, I'm going to back up a little bit. In Genesis 45, he gave gifts to his brethren. Then in verse 23 it says, and to his father he sent after this manner 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 she-asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, see that ye fall not out by the way. And they went out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father. Now, at this point, Jacob has been under the impression that his son Joseph has been dead for a long time. A long time. I mean, I'm satisfied that Jacob didn't question the matter at all after all this time. You know, Joseph was 17 when they sold him as a slave. It was about 13 years after that before he was promoted. Interpreted those dreams and was promoted to second in command of all of Egypt. And probably 9 or 10 years, because they'd gone through 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine. So 9, and we don't know how soon right after that. But he told his brethren, it's been 2 years of this famine. There's yet 5 more. And so he was sending to get his father and their family and bring them down to Egypt. So by this time, Jacob is 130 years old, in that neighborhood. And scripture says that he was going to be there. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself. Verse 25, and they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive. That would be unbelievable. Okay? And he is governor over all the land of Egypt. Now that's really unbelievable. And Jacob's heart fainted. My center column reference said, stood still. I guess his heart almost stopped. To think about this child of his old age that he loved so much when he was little, that at 17 was taken out of his life, And now, all these years later, he's told he's alive. Not only is he alive, he's ruler in Egypt under Pharaoh. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons, when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. He didn't believe his sons. Well, they'd lied to him a long time ago, in all of his life. I mean, all the years since. But then he saw an abundance of evidence. You ever had one of those experiences where something was hard to believe that it could be, but the Lord just gave us so much evidence? You know, and for them, Jacob, for seeing all those things coming, it probably took him a minute or two. I don't know. But it probably took him a little while. But when he saw the wagons, when he saw the abundance of evidence, Jacob their father, the spirit of Jacob their father, revived. And Israel said, "It's enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die." Evidently, Jacob thought he was close to the end of the way. And that's not unusual for folks to feel that way. But we can add it up, and he was around 130 years old. But you know, God blessed him with another 17 years. Another 17 years. Years to see Joseph, and God blessed them in Egypt. You know, there were 70 souls that went down into Egypt, and they came out a multitude. Millions. I mean, I don't know. Some of the estimates I've read was like, 2 to 4 million or something like that. Million. That's like a good part of the city of Atlanta, you know, maybe some of the suburbs. That's a lot of people. Of course, they were there a long time, over 400 years. But God told, and maybe even as good as all of the evidence was, and we can relate to this too, we find that Jacob still went and worshiped. And God, no doubt, there was a need. He appeared to Jacob in a dream, said, "Fear not." I'm satisfied that after God said, "Fear not," all the other evidence didn't matter. If God said it, he could trust it. So we find here yet another situation, very difficult situation, and yet God says, "Fear not. Fear not." So for all of the times where God says, "Fear not," there is a healthy fear for us, isn't it? We are to fear God. Not a slavish fear, not a fear of punishment, but a reverence. And when we have that reverence, what a blessing it is to us. Proverbs 14:26 says, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. Remember how we started out talking about what fear does to us? It weakens us, causes us to doubt, causes us to not do a lot of the things that we would do otherwise, weakening our witness, lessening the light that shines forth from us, lessening the influence that we're to have on others. But in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. That's what we need in it. And his children shall have a place of refuge. It's the rest of that verse. Proverbs 14:26. And his children shall have a place of refuge. We have a place we can go. We can go to the Lord. We can feel his protection. We can feel his love. We can know that we can trust in the Lord, no matter what the situation might be. Psalm 27. Psalm 27, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? That's a wonderful verse to remember. There'll be things that happens in life that'll grip us. There'll be things in life that'll catch us off guard. But the sooner we can remember the Lord is our help, the Lord is our strength. And as long as we're trusting in him, that we may have to endure, but we'll have him with us, helping us, strengthening us all along the way. And so Paul would write to Timothy and said, God hath not given us the spirit of fear. It didn't come from the Lord. It's one of the devil's favorite tools. God hath not given us, 2 Timothy 1:7. God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power. Not our power, his power. Power and love. The greatest love. I mean, we are to love him, and we do love him because he first loved us. But he showed us his love, didn't he? For God so loved the world of his elect. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's good to remember too, isn't it? Everlasting life. That's what we have from the Lord. Not giving us a spirit of fear, but a power and of love. Love. Doesn't John tell us that I'm not getting the first phrase. There's no fear in love. 1 John 4, verse 18. There's no fear in love. When God has shown us his love, God has shown us what he did, what he, by his purpose, his eternal purpose, by his power, all that was needed to bring to pass his gift of his Son. He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all. And no fear in love. The more we remember God's love, the more we remember the great lengths that God has gone to manifest that love to us, helps us to understand there's no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. So when our confidence is in the Lord, When our trust, when we are reminded and we understand He has all power, He has the greatest love for us, it helps us. It casts out fear. Perfect love casteth out fear. And that's exactly what, well, I've got one more word here. Not giving us a spirit of fear, but of power, and of love, and of a sound mind. And that love casts out fear. Now we're thinking like we should. When our confidence is set upon the Lord, when we're like Job, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. That's when we're thinking clearly. Sound mind. And that's exactly what we need to have victory over fear. To remember his power, his love. So that we can have a sound mind. Many ways, many times, to many people, God has said, fear not. And each one of those is a lesson for us. That we too, when we face the fears of life, would remember God has this. He's watching over us. He's able. May God help us to flee to him for that refuge, because he's our strong confidence. May God bless you is our prayer.